Well, for the past 4 years, Americans have been captivated by events remembering the 150th anniversary of the U.S. Civil War. 2 years ago, the nation saw one of the largest gatherings in memory of the Battle of Gettysburg. Now we've come to the dramatic climax of the war, 150 years since the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln. Current State's Kevin Lavery is here with more about this pivotal moment in history. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Mark. We all learned this story in grade school. It was April 14, 1865, when actor John Wilkes Booth crept up behind Abraham Lincoln at Ford's Theater and shot him in the back of the head. In 1865, political assassinations were by no means something new. Think back to Julius Caesar, even farther beyond that. But Lincoln's death was so shocking because it was the first time in America's short 89-year existence that it had lost a president to murder. I spoke with Roger Rosentrater, the professor of history here at Michigan State University, about Michigan's response to that fateful moment.
By April of 1865, clearly with the surrender of Robert E. Lee in Virginia, there's understandable enthusiasm back home. This very bloody war has finally come to an end. There'll be some additional fighting in the months of April and May. Matter of fact, in early May, there'll be a Michigan regiment that will capture a fleeing Confederate President Jefferson Davis in south central Georgia. Other than that, clearly one of the issues is the assassination of President Lincoln. There comes quite a shock there, both in the North and the South, I would think. I mean, there were a lot of Southerners who were equally shocked about the assassination of Lincoln.
Now, the funeral cortege for Abraham Lincoln did not come through Michigan. And in 1865, word was spread through word of mouth, the telegraph, and newspapers that the telegraph was probably the fastest way if your town happened to have one. What was the outpouring of feeling like across the state? You've written about this in one of your articles.
First of all, there is shock, naturally, that the president has been assassinated. I mean, in some cases, people said, well, he has completed his mission here. He has saved the Union, he has ended slavery, and now Providence has taken him. But what the federal government did is they issued a decree that said on April 19th, there would be a day of mourning. And what I found was an incredibly elaborate process all across the state. In a variety of cities, there were ceremonies, funerals, basically. Adrian, Lowell, Grand Rapids, Bay City, St. Joseph, Traverse City, Lansing, and clearly Detroit were among the cities that had funerals. There was an eagle. We don't want to boast about the fact we shot one, but apparently they shot an eagle in Michigan, and they sent the eagle and a variety of evergreens, which adorned the top of the coffin when it was in Chicago, which had a very elaborate ceremony, naturally. Then when we get to Springfield, a regiment, the 24th Michigan, which had bled heavily at the Battle of Gettysburg, had been sent to Springfield back in February of 65. And it was there for a draft rendezvous, which just happened to accidentally be in the Illinois Capitol. It proved to be the honor guard for the president's funeral. They were issued new uniforms, even white gloves. And apparently, to observers, they never saw the regiment make a better appearance than it did as it performed on that May 4th, 1865.
We're talking with Roger Rosentrater, an historian at Michigan State University, about the 150th anniversary of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and Michigan's response to it. There was another Michigan connection as well, Roger, when the conspirators, Mary Surratt and others, were being executed in Washington, D.C. There was a person there who was front and center.
Front and center, a native Michiganian from Jackson. His name was Christian Rath, R-A-T-H. And he had entered the Union Army in August of 1862. He was an officer in the 17th Michigan. He had served at the Battle of Antietam, Battle of Spotsylvania. And when the war ended, because he had been a former sheriff, he was picked to be the hangman for the Lincoln conspirators. So if you look at the very famous picture of the four people standing on the gallows, he's in the white coat and the white hat. He supervised the construction of the gallows. He got the graves dug. Matter of fact, he had to apparently seek out some volunteers to do the digging, and he had to encourage them with a shot of whiskey, apparently, to get them to actually do the digging, as it turns out. The night before the execution, he prepared the nooses, and he was ready the day of the execution. Now, well, the one thing he did do is he waited, because we had never hanged a woman before. And you mentioned Mary Surratt, and they kept waiting for President Johnson to pardon her, or at least not execute her. Didn't happen, as we all know. Matter of fact, he waited and waited, and the argument that apparently President Johnson later made was, quote, she kept the nest where the egg was hatched, unquote. So General Winfield Scott, a famous Union general, was in charge of the whole operation, and he turned to Rath and said, nope, there is no pardon coming, it's time. And Rath clapped his hands, and the props were knocked away, and the Lincoln assassins met their fate.
I suppose when you're born with the name Christian Rath, that's destiny.
It may be. He had never met Lincoln. He returned home to Jackson and became a shoemaker and lived out his life in Jackson.
Again, Roger, this was an era when the glare of the media was not in the president's face 24/7 the way it is now. People did not get information quickly. Information took days and weeks sometimes to come from Washington to other places in the country. Despite that, though, why do you think Abraham Lincoln held such esteem and such reverence among the American people who followed what he did as best they could for the entire duration of the war?
Well, certainly part of the answer to that question would be his personality, his ability to connect with people. Not everyone liked him, certainly. He had plenty of critics. But the ability, compassion, that certainly was part of his personality. Again, he maintains a focus on a very difficult, I mean, there is no precedent, certainly, in American history, I think, for the events that he had to deal with. He sometimes would say that history kind of pulled him along, that he wasn't always the leader. But I think if you, and I'm not a Lincoln scholar so much, but I think if you look carefully, you'll see that he evolves, certainly. He has to look at the various options he's got. He's got to be politically minded, certainly, in making decisions. I think good examples would be the whole issue of adding the abolition of slavery to the war cause, and then certainly encouraging the enlistment of African Americans, even driving home, you know, at the same time, the notion that we had to get the 13th Amendment adopted before the war ended, fearing that somehow, some way, slavery might creep back in if we didn't really make it unconstitutional like we did.
Roger Rosentrater is a professor of history at Michigan State University. We have come to the end of our sesquicentennial talks about Michigan's role in the Civil War with the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, April 14th, 1865. Roger, thanks so much.
Thank you, Kevin.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lightbury.
My captain does not answer. His lips are pale and still. My father does not feel my arm. He has no pulse nor will. The ship is anchored safe and sound, its voyage closed and done. From fearful trip, the victor ship comes in with object won. Exult, O shores, and ring, O bells, but I with mournful tread walk the deck my captain lies, fallen, cold, and dead.